Hey guys, welcome to the Delta Flyers. I'm your host, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, of course, is Robert Duncan McNeil. Robbie.
Robert Duncan McNeil. Yes, three names. That's me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you know Third Rock from the Sun?
Yes.
Which I've been watching with Megan, like doing a rewatch of, is about a family of aliens posing as humans. And in that family, there is a Tom or a Tommy, and there is a Harry.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
I just realized that. I've been watching. This has been our ritual. You know, Megan and I haven't been in Canada for a while. So our ritual is to kind of like watch a show every night. And, and so we watch a couple episodes of Third Rock. So we're already in the third season. And I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. There's a Harry and a Tommy. And of course,
that's crazy.
We are Harry and Tom too. So
yeah,
I never made that connection until now. And you clearly did not make that connection.
No, either. I didn't.
Okay.
I heard it's a great show. I would love to, I'd love to watch it. I hear it's really funny.
Yeah. You definitely should check it out.
Cool.
Well, this week's episode is
Unity.
And let's just say that you should probably know a little bit about this episode. And
a little bit,
Yeah. So why don't we, without further ado, why don't we go watch this and come back with our recap?
All right.
Yeah. And all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus segment. What do we remember? Hey guys, we are back from watching Unity.
Yes, we are.
Robbie's second episode.
I know.
Yeah.
It was a real flashback for me because I didn't remember a lot of this, but as I watched it, I had so many memories coming back.
Oh, I'm so excited. We get front row seat here. Let's go ahead and start with our typical poetry synopsis. And
yes, always good to start with some poetry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's start with a little haiku for Unity.
The Borg Collective. Chakotay linked and kissed. Janeway will be pissed.
Short and sweet. Okay. Yeah. Here we go. Here is my limerick for Unity. All right. Chakotay, Kaplan, heed the call of distress. No one to help, attacked by ex-Borg, no less. An ensign extinct. Commander is linked. Riley and company use one to suppress.
Ooh. Ooh. Nice.
Extra poetic there. You like that?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yes, this episode was written by Ken Biller and directed by Robert Duncan McNeil, who I vaguely remember.
Who is that? Robert Duncan, Robert Dunton? Denton McNeil? Okay.
I don't know. See, we can hardly remember him.
Did you talk to Ken Biller a lot before this episode or during this episode? Do you recall?
I actually don't recall talking to Ken a lot about this.
Okay.
Some. I'm sure I did. I mean, he was the writer of the episode, so he was there for all the prep meetings and all the decisions and conversations. But I can't recall like some in-depth, you know, conversation about issues with the script. I will say like my takeaway after watching this is if I could do this all over, I realize now how profound it was that we met the Borg for the very first time. Because we didn't know Seven of Nine was coming along. We didn't know that, you know, this could have been, and With the information that we had as actors, even as a director on the show, we could have just been meeting the Borg this one time for this one episode, and that would have been it.
Correct.
For Voyager. We may never have dealt with the Borg ever again.
Mm-hmm.
So my memory is I wasn't given the profound responsibility that I think as I watched this episode, I kind of think, wow, this was a big responsibility to kind of bring the Borg into Voyager's story.
Yeah.
And I didn't I don't remember having that kind of sense of responsibility.
I
didn't realize, you know, how big they would become in our story. So
no one relayed to you how serious this was going to, I mean, no one came to you and said, hey, this is a huge deal beforehand. You were just said,
nope.
you were just told, okay, you're going to direct this. You did pre-production and nobody really pulled you aside. Okay.
I don't think they knew, honestly, you know,
I don't think they
had any idea that they were going to introduce Seven of Nine, that the Borg would become a big part of our story. There wasn't a lot of, you know, digging into the big picture mythology of the Borg in Star Trek lineage. No, there weren't a lot of conversations.
Okay.
So, you know, my approach as, and having just rewatched this, my approach was more like, all right, I'll treat the Borg as sort of a horror movie side of things.
Mm.
And this other story, this Riley story will be a very personal story, obviously for Chakotay. It ends up making some very risky decisions based on his feelings about Riley and this cooperative, this collective. So,
right. Okay. Well, before we jump into the recap of this, I do want to talk briefly about the general feeling you had before directing Sacred Ground and the general feeling you had going into direct this, because you had a completely different excitement level and you name it. So can you just talk about that?
I think with Sacred Ground, when I first directed, I was super excited and particularly excited that Kate was the focus of the episode, because I really felt comfortable with Kate. I felt like I could trust her, that she trusted me, that I felt like I was in the right script at the right time. It was the perfect first episode for me, even though it came up by accident. Jonathan Frakes was supposed to direct that, and he had to back out of Sacred Ground because of getting the First Contact feature job. Even though it was an accident that I ended up directing that Sacred Ground episode, it was the perfect first fit for me.
Mm.
This one, I remember when I got it, I I've talked about it. I think I felt a little bit less comfortable. Not that Robert wasn't a great friend and actor and colleague. I felt very comfortable with him, but I just didn't connect to the script in the same way. I was trying to find a way in, as you and I talked about, like this whole Soviet Union collapse thing to me made sense. It was topical at the time. And so that was sort of the way in. And I made it more of a character personal story in my mind, you know, that he was sort of seduced by this relationship. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Good. So let's just dive right in. The very first scene, we see Chakotay and Kaplan are in a shuttle.
And I had forgotten about this character, Kaplan.
Yes.
Played by Susan Patterson, who was also in Future's End, standing, I think, at your station in Future's End.
Is that right? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I think she was established in that episode.
Okay. Okay.
And I think she may have had a line up at your station.
Okay. I feel like there's another actress that resembles her that you may be confused about, possibly. But maybe you want to look it up? You want to look it up? You can look it up.
I did look it up after I saw Susan
Patterson. It said Future's End?
I was like, where did this girl come from?
Yeah.
And it said she was also in Future's End. So,
okay.
But she may not have been at your station. She may have been somewhere else, maybe in the mess hall or somewhere else.
Right.
But she had a moment that she was established in Future's End just a few episodes back. And now we see her in a shuttle at the top of this episode. They're on a scouting mission, they say. And they're looking for a faster route home.
Through the Necrid Expanse.
The Necrid Expanse. Some of us like to call it the Necrid Expanse.
The Necrid Expanse, yes. So Kaplan and Chakotay, they're lost. But all of a sudden, they pick up a Federation hailing beacon, which is, you know, clearly an indication that Voyager is reaching out to them. But then they discover, wait a minute, this isn't coming from space. This is coming from the surface of a planet. And it's kind of weak. So it's not Voyager, because Voyager did not land on that planet. And then it's interesting because they detect 80,000 humanoids.
Yes, 80,000 humanoid life signs.
Right. But now later we've realized who these people are. But is that how many people are populating one Borg cube? That's a lot of people.
That's
Holy
a lot of people.
Moly.
80,000. Yeah. But they don't know this at the time. They have no Borg, you know, premonition here.
Not at
they
all.
Just think 80,000 humanoid life signs, very strange.
Right.
And they get this, so they approach this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And as they get close to the planet, they start to hear a broken up message. It's very, you know, distorted.
Yeah.
And it's from a Federation signal that they pick up. So they hear there's distress and they go down to this planet and we find them in some caves. And as the caves open up, they're in this kind of trash-filled wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very dark and scary yeah. place. I didn't remember, by the way, shooting this scene. my memory of directing this episode was the one set where Chakotay was sort of he was recovering in a bed. Later on, mm-hmm. we'll talk about that, mm-hmm. and where a lot of things happened in that one set, but. My memory was it was a really tough set to work in because it was basically sort of a cubicle off in a corner and then this sort of narrow hallway room. And that was about it. There wasn't much to shoot in.
Yeah.
But when I saw this first scene as they come through the caves on the planet and they step into this place where there's trash cans burning basically and,
mm-hmm.
and industrial kind of scaffolding and all kinds of stuff. I remembered this shooting the scene and it's this opening scene where they're sort of attacked in this trash-filled wasteland by these robed, mostly bald, by the way, interesting little detail that will make sense later, but they're mostly bald people shooting at them in these robes.
They look like monks basically. Yeah. Right,
they look okay. like monks. They're all kind of bald. You can't really tell if they're an alien life form or humans, or you know they're humanoid yeah. looking, but there's a great action sequence to open, you know, as they get into this planet.
Yeah,
the shootout starts. Kaplan is shot and we don't know if she's alive or dead.
Mm-hmm.
And as Chakotay goes to defend her, he's also shot and falls down unconscious.
Right. Right. I just want to rewind for a second and go back to when you said that they received a Federation message, a Federation signal. I think it was Riley saying, "Federation vessel, come in." So instead of, you know, there wasn't a Federation signature. I think it was her saying, you know, "Hey, Federation vessel," because there's dialogue between Chakotay and Kaplan. Like, you know,
oh, yeah, they wait say, a minute. How do they know?
How do they know we're a Federation vessel? Exactly. So this is the, you know,
that's right. Mystery, that's right.
And then yep. the other thing is that Chakotay launches a message buoy for Janeway, for Voyager to know that they are answering the distress call before
yes,
they
that's landed right.
on a planet. Right.
Yes.
Okay. So flash forward, Kaplan's out, Chakotay's down. And now Chakotay wakes up for the first time. And this is when he meets Riley Frazier. We mm-hmm. have a last name as well. She explains that she was attacked by aliens, put in stasis, and brought against her will to the Delta Quadrant.
And she also says she was a science officer with the Federation.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we know she's human. She was a science officer on a Federation vessel, but attacked by aliens, but she's very vague about that. She doesn't really say.
She says,
say,
yeah, we were put aliens. In stasis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Chakotay's got some questions, but she goes, yeah, we were put in stasis, basically mm-hmm. in stasis. And then we woke up here.
Yeah.
And yep. so we were grabbed and then we woke up and we were dumped here. And she says, there's dozens of races and species that none of them trust each other. So that explains this little gang war that just happened.
Right. Right.
She says it's anarchy since everybody woke up. Since everybody woke up, it's basically anarchy. And she says that about 100 people have established a peaceful cooperative, and that's where he's at right now.
Chakotay has basically stumbled upon West Side Story, you know, with
yes.
the gangs. And do you recall myself and Chakotay on the bridge singing West Side Story?
I do.
Do you remember yes. that? Instead of the song Maria, like Maria, I sang Chakotay. I just met a boy named Chakotay. I sang that in place of Maria. Right. Yes. So these are the hijinks that we had.
Yes.
And in this episode, it's the real life kind of a alien West Side Story in a way.
Yeah. It's gang warfare.
It's gang
anarchy
warfare.
On this planet.
Yep.
Everybody's out for themselves. And
yep.
she basically says, you're lucky you woke up in this cooperative mm-hmm. where we have decided to work together. And he's very weak and very disoriented. And
right.
she, ultimately says, you need to rest. You need to get better. That's an order. She gives mm-hmm. him an order.
Yeah, you see the veins that the makeup department put all that stuff on the side of his head to depict the serious neural trauma that he endured from that one. I don't know if it's a phaser blast, but let's just say the whatever energy weapon that they had, right?
Well, the energy weapon they had, if you noticed, was a green color.
It was green. But then when Riley's people came through, it was an orange, like almost like a flamethrower or something. It was really, it was a different type of a color beam and type of beam as well. Yeah. So, yes. So the green color.
But little details like that Borg green weapon.
Yeah.
It definitely, you know, that jumped out at me, which was a nice detail. So she says rest. And then we cut to the bridge and we see Tom Paris down front saying, this is a really boring part of space. So clearly they're not worried about Chakotay at this point.
No.
They're waiting. No clue. They knew he was out of comm range and they're just waiting for him to, connect with them and they even say like they have a rendezvous point in a couple of days or something, so there's no urgency to this on the bridge. We cut to them. Paris is bored. The captain says something like, well, you know, you can clean the warp conduits if you're that bored, Lieutenant. And he's like, no, this is actually a very interesting place to explore and study, and no, I'm good.
Did you notice when she says you can clean the warp plasma filters or whatever. Did you notice her voice sounded, she sounded sick. She sounded sick Yes. And this is the episode where multiple people, there's different scenes. There's a scene when B'Elanna's talking later on and gosh, it sounds like she has a head cold. So Janeway, when she says the warp plasma filters are due for a thorough cleaning, that line right there to me sounds like she's dealing with a cold. Kim sounds like he has a cold in a later scene. So all throughout this episode, I made a note. This is like everyone got a cold during this episode.
I wonder what time of year, because if you look at our episodes, we started filming in June. Mm-hmm. We usually broke, you know, a little past the halfway point of a season by Christmas.
Right.
And that's usually...
This is right now. This is winter right now, right?
Yes. Yeah. This is, I think, you know, January, February or something. I bet everybody was fighting a cold, which is interesting. I'll say in the pandemic world that we've been living in, because I've been using hand sanitizer and mask wearing and all of those things, I have not been sick for a year and a half. And I get sick, sorry to sidebar into this, but I usually get sick 5 or 6 times a year. I get a cold.
Really?
Or I'll get a big flu. I always get one or two, like knock me out. I got a fever and I'm sick every year, at least once, usually twice. And I have not had a single anything in a year and a half. So
that's great.
The upside of this pandemic, at least for me, is I have not had to suffer through any of those small little annoying sicknesses. And I think I would imagine a lot of people feel the same because, you know, like you said, we used to always get sick, the cast and the crew of Voyager, usually starting around December, Thanksgiving, December, and going through February. Just have everybody would be passing something around, some cold. And this was definitely in that time. So interesting.
Yeah, because if you think about it, man, like we're so aware now of touching things, door handles, you know, anything like that. But back then, there's only one door. Well, there's more than one, but one main door that to go into stage 8, one main door to go into stage 9. Everyone grabs that same handle. And so, one person, one crew person, one actor who's sick is going to pass it to every single other person that's working on that project. That's over 100 people working on one television show getting sick because of the door handle.
You and I recently were talking to Roxanne Dawson.
Yes.
We did some bonus interviews with. And she reminded me that I had been patient zero for the chicken pox on our crew.
I forgot about that. Oh my
Remember
God.
That?
Yeah.
That I, right before the Christmas holidays, my daughter, who was in elementary school at the time, got the chicken pox and must have given it to me, but I didn't realize it. But I went to work and I had a fever and I wasn't feeling good. And I worked anyway, because that's what we did. And I ended up passing it on to a bunch of crew members, a bunch of important crew members like Billy Peets, our gaffer, and a number of people that got the chicken pox as grownups because of, Yeah, because of...
Were you never vaccinated as a kid, or you never had chickenpox as a kid?
I wasn't. Goodness gracious. I didn't know that, but clearly I wasn't because I got it.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
I forget what season that was. I forget exactly when it happened.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. It didn't affect me because I had I had chickenpox as a kid, so I was never, you know, infected by your patient zero germs. I'm sure Billy and those guys are really,
that kind of thing happened on our show all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying is, you know, this pandemic has definitely changed people's thinking, and I hope in a long-term good way.
Yes.
About washing hands. Yeah. About touching, you know, handles of doors.
Mm-hmm.
Just about all that stuff that, you know, without being paranoid, just being smart, you know, so that we all stay healthy. Okay, so we're still on the bridge. Paris was bored. And then at the end of this bridge scene, we pick up something on sensors, we magnify, and oh my gosh, it's a Borg cube.
Yeah.
It's a Borg cube, the first Borg cube of that Voyager has seen. What are they doing here?
Right.
Come back from a break, and they realize there's no life signs on this Borg cube.
It's just adrift. Disabled. It's just adrift.
It's adrift.
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway says she wants to go aboard this Borg cube and study this technology. She's like, we could learn something. Oh, Janeway, stay off it. Let it stay adrift.
You see Tuvok's face when she makes that suggestion.
Right?
He's like, come again? I mean, he's just like, he's right. Not happy. He's like, are you insane, Captain? But yes, Janeway wants to learn about the Borg technology.
And that makes sense. I get it. I know sometimes I'm tough on Janeway. I'm like, she keeps, you know, pushing us into dangerous situations, but it does make sense. Like, study, you know, look at this, but be careful because you're walking around on a time bomb that could you could reactivate.
But I do admire that move because most starship captains would be on defense only. They would say, "Let's shields up, let's get away." Whereas Janeway is like, "Wait a minute. Hold on, let's go investigate." So she kind of goes on the offense in a way to get the advantage or see if there's any advantage we can get if we come across a Borg cube that is functioning. We can maybe learn a few things that can help us turn the tide.
It does make sense.
Cube. Yeah, so it does.
But by the way, not to spoiler alert, but do we learn anything? Like, do we actually learn anything about it?
Well,
I don't want to give away the ending of this episode, but I don't think we do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, her whole logic of let's go on this Borg cube, I don't think we learn anything.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll
all right. We'll come back to that. okay. We flash over to the ex-Borg cooperative and we learn that Chakotay is a vegetarian, which I don't recall that
all.
I'm like, what?
Never.
You're a vegetarian. What? Didn't he?
Yeah,
okay.
Eating these fresh vegetables, and he says, "Yes, I'm a vegetarian."
I'm a vegetarian. But do you recall? There's
Never.
Been times where he's had dinner with Janeway, and they talk about ordering, you know, from the replicator. I'm pretty sure they ordered some meat dishes back then.
Yeah,
in season one and two.
I think that was a stupid detail he didn't need to say I'm a vegetarian because he's not.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is. While they're talking, by the way, he says to Riley, he says, "You know, I could talk to the captain. And we could bring as many as we can of you know, your group on board with us and bring you home."
That's right.
And she goes, "No, you know, this is like home now."
Yeah.
She says, Riley says, "This feels like home." It's like she talks about we were Texas homesteaders.
Right.
You know, it's like we feel I feel like we're Texas homesteaders. And she's from Texas. She talks about that a number of times. She sells him basically on the value of this cooperative.
She sells them, but it's kind of a red flag as well. It's sort of like, really? You don't want to go back to Earth?
It is because she comes off like some weird cult member.
Yes,
honestly.
Yes.
Like it definitely, a number of times. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, looking back at this as the director of this episode, I think that there were a lot of times where she felt like where Riley feels like a cult member.
Okay.
And I wish that I had tamped that down.
Okay.
Because, you know, as a director, I wish I had said, you know, don't make it so
obvious.
And obvious. Yeah. Just throw it away. It's just
throw it off.
Know,
yeah.
Lighten this up a bit because it's feeling, you know, it's feeling like a cult and kind of creepy. And I don't think that Chakotay would be as naive to not notice that.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct. Yep. So that would have been a good adjustment for sure.
By the way, in that scene when they're, you know, they wander around, they eat some vegetables. He says he's a vegetarian. They talk about this cult. And then she says she's got to go and he should rest. And he watches her leave and sort of watches her go into this bright doorway. It seems very mysterious. And he's kind of suspicious and he clocks her pushing the buttons, which will come back later on. Anyway.
Right. Okay, now we flash over to the Borg cube, and it's Tuvok and Torres, and I think maybe one or two other crewmen that they are there to investigate, and they're looking all around. We have that one moment where they're kind of looking through some conduits or cables, and that one Borg corpse falls forward, so that's your little horror movie moment there, right?
Exactly. I made the same note. I was like, you know, I had forgotten about all of this, that we were on the Borg cube. I didn't remember.
Yeah.
But I wanted to treat, as the director, I wanted to treat all of that stuff on the Borg cube like it was a haunted house, like it was a scary horror movie. Mm. And so, as I recall, that scene in the script seemed very short. It's like they're basically, it was like a couple of lines, you know, they're walking around, they look at some creepy stuff, and then a dead Borg guy falls out.
Yeah.
It was not a very long scene, but no. I wanted to amplify the horror movie style. So
And it worked, you know, it made me jump. And I think that dead Borg, I think that's Keith. I think that's Sue's boyfriend, Keith.
I think it was too. I know he was a Borg background for sure. Guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We ended up having a few, you know, later in the episode, there'll be a few Borg appearing, but at this point, just the dead Borg falls forward.
Right.
Then we cut into the briefing room. And they let us know that they brought that dead Borg on board. Janeway, come on. And they're going to do an autopsy.
Right.
And they talk about, well, why, who defeated the Borg? Like, why are they dead? It makes no sense. And I think Torres says maybe the Borg were defeated by an enemy more powerful than they were.
Yeah.
Which is very ominous because the Borg are the, you know, pretty much the most powerful bad guy in Star Trek mythology at this point.
Up until this point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the Borg drone that they bring on board, and we're not to that scene where they're actually doing the autopsy. That's not Keith, though. That guy's somebody else. But the one that falls forward is Keith. So I'm thinking, there's other Borg drone bodies that they probably could have, they probably came across. Yeah, so maybe. I'm guessing that's what it was, right? So now we jump over to the ex-Borg cooperative. That's what I'm calling it, the EBC. So they're back at the EBC in Chakotay. He gets out of the building. He figures out the right code.
Yeah, he goes like to that game door of that Simon. He watched Riley push some buttons and he's trying to remember what was the sequence she pushed. Mm-hmm. He eventually does.
Figures it out.
Opens the door. He sneaks into this, what looks like a workshop, like a, I don't know, like they're workers carrying stuff around and doing, you know, building things. And it's part of this cooperative. And he finds Riley. He finds a group of people gathered around someone, a bald person.
Right.
And they're working on some technology in the back of that bald head.
Yeah.
Suddenly that, you know, the bald person turns around and it's Riley. Mm-hmm. And she had hair. She had long blonde hair in the earlier scene.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you realize, oh, she's bald and there's tech in her head.
Right.
And there's amputees around.
Yeah. And we talked about the whole amputee thing that you guys had essentially found some amputees to use as background actors to sort of show the, you know, ex-Borg maybe without an arm or whatever. And then we also talked about how some of these amputees were used in a prior episode, the shoot with Tom and Harry and the prison ship. And I have some interesting revelations to talk about that later on.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains now at Menards. Stain in one coat with Ultra Advanced Semi-Transparent Stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Should I just tell you right now? I'm going to tell you right now. The amputee that shoots and kills Kaplan is the same amputee that stabs you, Tom Paris, on the shoot.
Really?
Yes. Same background actor. I swear to God. I'm sitting there going, that can't be. And I rewound it and I actually went and looked at the shoot and I got to that scene where the guy stabs you. I'm like, yeah, same guy. Yeah. So he got used quite a bit. So there you go. That's a little
interesting
trivia bit for you.
So, you know, Chakotay is stunned and shocked that Riley is bald and has tech in her head. And so we come back from break and he says to her, are you a Borg? He asks her straight up. And she tries to explain things. And she says that the link to the collective was severed by some kind of electrokinetic storm.
Mm-hmm. That damaged the cube. Yeah. But her response is, we were Borg, you know, we're not Borg, which is, that's a very important distinction to make. Were past.
Yes.
Right. But this is really the first time we've seen a Borg cube that's disabled like this in all of Star Trek. We don't really see that, you know, happening. So this is a big deal.
She does introduce this character named Orym, and Orym has a Borg arm still. He still has that technology arm. And he is their medic, she says.
Yeah.
And he says he's a Romulan. Mm-hmm. And she talks about in this moment, she does basically tell him the truth, which is they were Borg, that there was this storm, this electromagnetic storm, and they were disconnected. The link to the collective was severed and they became free and everything was new again. And she said, you know, species and races that hated each other before now looked at each other in a whole new light. And Orym says, you know, I was Romulan. I should hate these people, but I don't. I'm here to help. And he seems very smart. He's a medic. He's the doctor and a scientist. Mm-hmm. And as Chakotay is hearing all of this, he ultimately is starting to, you know, get sicker and sicker from his injuries. And he faints. He passes out. And Orym actually catches him in that moment, which I thought was an interesting detail that, you know, they seem to be very sympathetic and very, you know, they're obviously sharing all the details a little slower than maybe Chakotay wanted, but they're telling the truth so far. So Chakotay passes out and that's how we go out of that scene. And then we go to sickbay.
Right. So now we're in sickbay and we have the doctor and Kes and Torres. So they're examining a Borg drone, which is not Keith. And inadvertently, the doctor activates a backup neural electric power cell, and this thing just kind of sits up and starts moving all over the place. And I just love Roxanne's reaction. She's like, turn it off! I mean, she's really freaked out. Because even when they were on the cube in the first scene, first time they were on the cube, they're investigating, she's very nervous. This is, you know, as brave as Torres is, when it comes to the Borg, she doesn't want any bit of it. She's like, no, thank you.
No. After this accidental, you're right, the cortical probe sort of reactivates the neuroelectric power cell accidentally. Yeah. And the doctor doesn't think it's a big deal, but Torres knows that, like, if you reactivate this cube, they are impossible to fight, to defeat.
Right. You
know,
you can't stop
scared
them.
To death of
them. You can't stop them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to the planet and Orym is explaining to Chakotay that the Borg collective consciousness has inherent medical benefits that, you know, he says, look, you're getting worse, but let me actually let you in on something. Like, when we link up, you know, when we were linked as a collective, we could help each other through these things, through, you know, medical challenges.
Right.
The neural link allowed them to repair injured Borg, you know, that yeah. was a benefit of this collective consciousness.
Yeah, it could repair organic and inorganic matter,
yeah.
you know, and just that whole concept is pretty interesting.
They explained to Chakotay, like, it's almost like a transfusion.
Yes.
Imagine, like, if all of us got together and donated to you know, in a transfusion to you, mm-hmm. we could help you, not just right. one of us helping, but all of us helping.
Right. So instead
it's
of a trans-
very powerful concept.
It is. And instead of a transfusion yeah. of blood, this is a transfusion of energy is what it is. Right. So a healing yes. type of energy, which really that concept is, it's pretty forward and kind of cool, actually. That'd
it's
be amazing.
It's a very cool tech idea. Yes. Mm-hmm. If you could gather the energy, the healing energy of a group of people and put it together. And Orm also explains, and Riley explains, that they have this neural transceiver that could be temporary for Chakotay, and there's no lasting effects at all. Mm-hmm. And we could help heal you, that you're going to die mm-hmm. if you don't let us kind of pull you into our cooperative, our good version of the Borg, our little right. good version,
right.
and put this temporary neural transceiver on you and heal you. Otherwise, you're going to die. They say, you've got to decide. He's got to decide. And he's got a line here, which I was just like, ugh, it was just such an uncomfortable line for me. He goes, well, it's either that or the happy hunting grounds. Huh?
Oh, I made a note. You were going to be bothered by that. Yes, you were.
It's like, oh boy, really?
It was the 90s. We got to let it go, right?
It's okay.
It was the 90s. Okay.
So but I was like, oh, poor Robert has to say the happy hunting grounds to make some
cliche native joke. Yes, yes, we hear you. Yes. Yeah.
But he does agree, and they place the transceiver on him, mm-hmm. and suddenly he begins to hear all of them. And so that's played in sort of this audio track that we can hear what he hears inside his head.
That's right.
And it's all of these voices, and they're speaking in unison. Mm-hmm. And it goes from the voices to images. He can see all of these memories of mm-hmm. every single person in the collective.
Yes, because not only is he viewing all these memories, he is hearing everyone's thoughts as if they are his own. So yeah. that is where it becomes extremely acid trippy right there, right? Because yeah. he's not just kind of being a fly on the wall and observing this. He is
watching other people. It is as if he's experiencing
it firsthand, yeah. which is so, you know, absolutely incredible. And he talks about when he comes to that, he is amazed by this experience.
And he's alone with Riley at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
He's alone with Riley, wakes up, and he's improving. It yeah. seems to have worked, this mm-hmm. collective healing that went on.
Yes.
And he goes, it's incredible. It was this incredible. He says, I know you like blue bonnets. And, mm-hmm. you know, all these things that Riley loves and mm-hmm. things that matter to her. Mm-hmm. They talk about an old man, and she says that's her grandfather or something.
Yeah.
So he is, you know, without ever having gone through, you know, conversations about all these things and sharing as separate people, he has experienced all the things that Riley has experienced.
Yeah.
And then at one point she touches herself.
And he feels it.
Yes. She touches her hand, her wrist or something.
Yeah.
And he says, I can feel that.
Yeah.
And then he does the same. And it gets into this, like, she says, yes, that's a residual effect. Just a residual effect. It's not going to last because we promised you it was temporary. But anyway, she says, yes, that's a residual effect of neural transmitter. And they start to get close, and he's touching his wrist and she's touching her wrist. And it gets very sexual and intimate. And I got to say, it was kind of creepy. This collective set, basically you realize we're going into, oh, you're going to have some weird Borg connected collective sex situation.
But you cut away from that. They don't even kiss. They kiss each other.
No.
They kiss their own hands, I think, but they don't kiss each other's lips. So
yeah.
But kissing your own hand is like kissing the other person's hand, right?
Yes.
Basically.
I mean, I get it intellectually, but when, you know, now that I'm looking back on directing those scenes, you know, 25 yeah. years later, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is just awkward. This is a creepy, awkward Borg collective sex scene about to happen. Yeah. So that's the end of that scene.
Do you remember directing them on that scene? Did you say like, okay, guys, you're going to be touching your own hands and pretty much experiencing pleasure from that? I mean, what did you say to those guys?
I don't remember. To take a step back, I got to be honest. Like, my first experience was amazing. This one, I just never felt on my A game with this one directing.
Okay.
And it was a sophomore effort.
Yeah.
I feel like, and in the rewatching of it, I got to be honest, there's so many moments and scenes where I'm like, oh, I wish I'd staged that differently or shot it. You know, I was definitely trying some new things. I was feeling a little bit of confidence as a director.
Yeah.
But trying things and making mistakes in some ways and not knowing enough to correct other things. And so it definitely felt like a real sophomore experience for me, this directing this episode. If I had to sit back in judgment of how well this is directed, mm-hmm. I would say not great.
Okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. There's some moments.
All right. Anyway. So the parallel in the world of sports is this is your sophomore slump right here.
Yes, okay? Absolutely.
And that's human of all of us. I mean, that happens. I think you came out with Sacred Ground as kind of the Wunderkind. It's like, whoa, look at that. He did it. Woohoo. And everyone's all excited for you, and you were excited to do that job too, and you had a connection with Kate that was really very strong, a bond before you even started directing her in that. So that was a good episode for you, and then you hit this one and you're just kind of like and it was a bit of a miss, right, in terms of
it feels like a bit of a miss. I mean, I feel like I never quite got deeply inspired by the script. I was trying to stage some scenes that were, in my opinion, awkwardly scripted sometimes, and you know, make them more interesting than I felt like they were on the page, trying to amplify moments, or you know, I was trying to do too, sometimes I tried to do too much, and other times I didn't do enough. I guess that's the lesson.
I hear you. You're only human, Robbie. You're only human.
Yeah. And just to jump even forward, my next episode that I directed, I think, was Someone to Watch Over Me in season 5.
The doctor episode.
The doctor in 7 episode, Doctor Teaching 7 How to Date. And I just got to say, like, that's one of my favorite episodes of television out of hundreds that I've worked on now.
Yeah.
Since then.
150, right?
Ever worked, something like that. I don't know how many I've directed, but it's probably close to 150. But Someone to Watch Over Me, my third episode, I am deeply proud of on every level. I'm so proud of that episode. We haven't recapped it yet. Maybe I'll change my mind, but it's really one of my favorite episodes of Voyager in all 7 seasons, whether I direct it or not. I think it's a really good episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the life of an episodic television director, is sometimes you get the scripts that you connect to, sometimes you don't. This one definitely is lower down on the scale of my connection and my satisfaction.
Okay. Well, I think when you reach the same number of episodes you filmed on Voyager, which is 170, whatever, when you reach that number as a director, that's when you stop. I want you to stop, and I want you to become a contractor, a landscape contractor, great. A house contractor, whatever, because you love doing that kind of stuff too.
So. Well, I love doing that stuff.
Yes, you do. You do. Yeah. All right.
But I love the directing.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, so all right. So they have the creepy sex, the Borg collective sex. And we cut to the bridge after this.
Mm-hmm.
And we realize the bridge has picked up this message buoy.
Yeah.
That Chakotay left.
That's right.
And so now they're on his trail.
At first they couldn't, though. They couldn't locate the shuttle. Chakotay or Kaplan couldn't find anything. And then boom, the message buoy shows up.
So very smart of Chakotay to leave that message buoy.
Yes.
We go back down to the planet, and Chakotay's working in the co-op.
Yep.
And Orym is very grateful. Great to have, you know, another energy in our cooperative, and have your energy. And
kind of cultish. Yep. Mm-hmm.
A little cultish. And Chakotay even says, you know, I'm feeling a little bit of a letdown here because the link is gone. You know?
Yeah. I need that high again, man. I need that high.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a buzz off of that.
Yeah, he did.
And he's starting to feel the letdown that So he's basically saying he feels like the link is gone.
Yes.
Little do we know, maybe.
Dun,
it's
dun,
not,
dun. But... They detect Voyager also. They know the Voyager's coming.
That's right.
Right? Okay.
They know that Voyager's close. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now Voyager comes, picks up Chakotay, and Chakotay is on the ship with Riley now in the briefing room. And Riley's trying to sell Janeway. She basically says, look, here's the proposal. We need some help. We need a transponder. We need something turned on the Borg cube and directed towards the planet so that basically we can bring all these warring tribes together and become one and become, you know, one happy family. And of course, Janeway is very, very hesitant to acquiesce to this demand slash proposal because she's thinking, yeah. Well, what's going to happen? We turn on the Borg cube that all the
we
Borg
reactivate,
drones.
Yes. Yeah.
What's going to happen?
Reactivate the Borg? Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? Yes.
Yeah. And Riley's like, you know, we just need a bigger neuroelectric field generator.
Right.
And then we can link everybody back together.
Yep.
And they're going to feel the love and feel the connection.
That's
and
it.
All of this chaos and anarchy will stop.
Right.
And Janeway just says, this sounds dangerous. I got to think about this.
Yeah.
Riley understands and she leaves. And this is one of those scenes coming up with Janeway and Chakotay where I felt like as a director, I was trying to do too much.
Okay. Anyway, okay.
There's too much blocking and movement and.
Oh yeah. And there moments, was a lot of extra you know? Movements there. Yes. I do recall
a lot
that.
Of movement in the scene, you know, Janeway comes over and hovers around Chakotay and by the way, Janeway is jealous in this scene.
She is. I noticed that. It's like, yeah. She's like, she doesn't say a thing about it, but boy, she definitely played that card.
Well, she says something. Right? She's got a line where she says something like, well, you got to know them very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. She doesn't even seem to trust Chakotay in the scene.
Well, she asked for his advice, right? She goes, what do you think I should do? And through that conversation, basically, it turns out that she's not going to accept that proposal. So she declines Riley's request. And
well, she says something at one point that I think is interesting. She says, you know, because he says, I think we should do it. And she's like, imposing a connection on thousands of people
right.
who have no choice in this matter
is
not right.
That's right. Yeah.
And I thought that was a great detail because, you know, basically Chakotay is saying, yeah, let's do this. It's a good idea. We'll connect everybody and they'll feel all this love that I felt.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, we're not. There's 80,000 people here. You can't just do something to them without them agreeing to it.
It's basically a violation of the Prime Directive. Mm-hmm. It's sort of just saying, look, we're going to interrupt your lives and force you to join our crew because we decided this. Yeah, we didn't even consult you. So it is definitely something that Janeway is not happy about. And she doesn't agree with it.
Yeah. And then Chakotay says, okay, I'll let Riley know. Like he gets it. You're not going to do this. So that's how we end that scene.
Right.
It was a big shift in the Chakotay-Janeway love story. Because this is the first time as we've slowly progressed and they've toyed and teased with the Janeway-Chakotay relationship and love story.
Yeah.
That something has happened outside of that love story in a way, at least for a while. And Janeway gets it. Like she's not happy about it. Mm-mm. I think there's a subtext here for the JC shippers that, you know, this relationship is not all, you know, all good. And Janeway's pissed off about what's gone on with Chakotay here. So we go back to EBC and there's Neelix and B'Elanna mingling and chatting it up and laughing with some of the ex-Borg and the cooperative people.
Mm-hmm.
And Chakotay again says, you know, Riley, come with us.
Yeah.
And he says to her, I've never understood anyone better in my entire life. That's pretty tough for the JC shippers, for the Janeway Chakotay shippers to have a moment in this episode where he says to someone, another woman, I have never understood anyone better in my entire life. What?
Oh, Janeway Chakotay fans are so upset at this point.
They're so upset. And by the way, even Torres, even B'Elanna, when she comes in and says, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
She sees it. Like you see in Roxanne's performance there. Like,
whoa,
I walked in on an awkward lover's goodbye.
And yes.
She sees the chemistry there.
She played that well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the last moment is so weird to me because... And I directed this, so I should remember these things, but I don't. But the last moment is so weird because Chakotay goes over to Riley and he just sort of caresses her face. There's a weird face touch.
Well, it almost looks like, Robbie, that he brings the hand up to maybe an inch away from her face. It doesn't really touch her. Yes. So
no, it's a weird non-touch moment.
Yes. Directed by yours truly.
Yeah. Anyway, so we go back to the shuttle and there's Chakotay and Torres heading back. And she's like, you know, what you could use is just a real hoverball thrashing. Like, let's go back on the, you know, on the holodeck and play some hoverball. And you just get back to your old routine. Like, just shake all this off.
Yeah.
She's worried. She even says, you know, you sure you're okay? And then Chakotay starts to hear voices.
Yeah.
We need your help. We need your help, Chakotay. It's so creepy. So
can we say that together to see if it sounds like a Borg voice? Okay, on three. So we'll go one, two, three. We need your help, okay? One, two, three. We need your help.
Wait.
We got to start at the same time. Ready? One, two, three.
We need your help. Do it again.
Ready?
One. See, we are so not
Wait, come Borg on. Let's collective. Be Borg. Let's be Borg collective right
okay,
now.
Okay, here we go. Channeling
the ABC.
Borg.
One, ready. Two, three.
We need your help, Chakotay.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. We're not Borg.
So. We're not Borg. All right. So then he thinks that Torres says something. He's like, excuse me, did you say something? And she's like, what? No. And then he hears it again. And that's when he goes into like secret agent mode where he's, what do you call that? When you activate the cell agent or something that doesn't know that they're an agent. So he then pulls out his phaser and shoots your future wife.
Yes, he pulls out his phaser and stuns Torres.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's on the run. Here we go. We go to the bridge and they're like, what the?
He has altered course, huh? Yeah.
Altered course. Let's go chase that mofo.
Yeah.
So off they go after Chakotay. And then you cut back to the ex-Borg planet and they're all standing in a circle.
Yeah.
And they're talking to him and you realize, oh, the link, this neural link still is there. They lied.
It's not severed at all. It's still
not
there.
Temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking to him and he transports over to the Borg cube. This dead Borg cube, and they're telling him you've got to look for this particular thing. You've got to reactivate the cube. If you reactivate the cube, it'll help us all, you know, these 80,000 people get along.
Just to clarify though, Robbie, I mean, the whole reason why they're talking to him now is because the other gang is about to break in to their quarters, to their headquarters, right? So,
the other gang on the planet, the bad ex-Borg, are trying to take them down and they're losing. It's a losing battle.
It's a losing battle. It's crunch time right now. That's why they connect with him. And so that's why he goes to the Borg cube to try to activate this neural electric generator. Janeway sends Tuvok along with Kim and some other security personnel to find Chakotay. The firefight ensues. Chakotay actually knocks out, stuns Tuvok, and then Kim stuns Chakotay. It was Kim that shoots Chakotay. And you saw that cool move that I did with I had the phaser and then I tap my comm badge while I'm holding the phaser. It was kind of
nice. I probably directed you to do that.
You might have. Yeah. probably not. So we basically take out Chakotay, but as Chakotay is passing out, he activates the neural electric generator.
As he's collapsing, he's got a couple of seconds and he looks at the button and he basically like slides his hand across the button and activates the Borg cube.
Right. And we see the first Borg drone to kind of activate and start walking. And it's John Tampoya.
That's right.
My stand-in. Da-da.
Yeah, a bunch of the regular stand-ins and background on our show got to be Borg in this episode. Yeah, Keith and John and a number of people. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Borg are reactivated. Thanks, Janeway.
Yeah.
Great job hanging out by the Borg cube. Why didn't you just blow it up?
I know. And they almost grab the away team, but Kim calls for an emergency beam out and boom, they're out of there in the last nick of time, in the last second, they're out of there. Mm-hmm. And now the ex-Borg collective, the Raiders are stopped. They're completely just stopped in their tracks. They're breaking in. And then, of course, once the generator is activated, they're all linked. So they stop. So it is right. And if you look, when they stop, the guy that kind of is focused, the guy that is in the center of that frame of that that shot is the guy that stabbed you in the shoot. So.
Oh, how funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How funny.
We jump back and forth between the bridge where we see the Borg cube self-destruct and explode. And of course, there was major craziness that happened before that because we think we're about to be attacked. But no, the Borg cube explodes. And we jump to sickbay. Chakotay and Janeway have their little chat. You know, she sort of kind of gives them a little hall pass. Like, hey, yeah, I know that you weren't acting on your own volition, that you were sort of coerced to doing that.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of awkwardness between those two because, yeah, I think Janeway senses that he did have this crazy connection with another woman. And that was Riley, right? But Chakotay feels pretty cheated by that, though. I feel like, you know, at the end, he's kind of like not happy that they used him to start the generator. I'm not sure if you directed it that way or if the script is that way, but it definitely is that sort of like feeling of unsettledness in Chakotay.
Yeah. Well, he even has a line, I think, where he says, you know, how long will their ideals last in the face of that kind of power?
Yeah.
That now that they've reconnected, even though he does agree that what Riley said and Orem said about the collective makes sense in theory, that their intentions are good right now.
Mm-hmm.
Once they reconnect this collective, this 80,000 people all connected, they have this medical regeneration technology. They've got all kinds of power. That how long will those ideals last? And that's a part of, to go back to the kind of the, for me at least, the inspiration of this, the fall of the Soviet Union, which was happening and had just sort of happened as we made this episode, as Voyager was starting to film. You know, that's a big question. You know, a lot of people would say, well, in theory, communism could be a good thing, but in reality, it isn't, because all of a sudden there's this collective power in the hands of a few.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was an interesting, you know, political statement and social observation and just a great character moment for Chakotay to say, yeah, I feel like that connection is an amazing experience. I've personally experienced that connection. And it's amazing, but yet it has a dark side too. And his concern about that I thought was interesting. So
growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill, Spend, and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy corporate card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill, Spend, and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
So is that what is the underlying theme for you? The underlying lesson from this episode?
I think the underlying lesson is about, you know, the collective power, you know, can be a dangerous thing. That even though the intentions may be good, that when you amass together that sort of connection, that collective connection, and everyone is sort of uniform, whether they chose to be or not, you know, like Janeway said, that now that there's a power that will overwhelm any good intentions and good ideas.
Yeah, and power corrupts, you know? Yeah. I mean, too much power, for sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks, man. I'm glad that you...
That was fun.
We were able to share your insight of, and I'm sorry you had a sophomore slump. I mean, you definitely picked it up after this. So Someone to Watch Over Me was an excellent, excellent episode.
We often give a, you know, 1 to 10. I would give this a 5.
Honestly. Okay. Okay.
I give it a 5, maybe a 6 tops.
Okay. I'm going to fall at about a 6 myself.
Mm-hmm. This was fun.
Yeah.
For
thanks,
all our
guys.
Patreon patrons, you stick around. We got some bonus material for you and for everybody else. We'll see you next week.